Donald, thanks very much for that. Just before I let you go, Tesco have, they claim to have settled Donegal's greatest food debates. And they have give us the information as to which is the most popular tea. Do you drink tea at home? Or is there tea in the house?
Yes, absolutely.
Is it Lyons or Barry's or something
Lyons.
Else? Lyons. What percentage of, what would you say the breakdown percentage is? Lyons and Barry's are the top two?
Locally or nationally?
Donegal.
I would say, oh, Lyons is going to be far higher than Barry's. I'd say in Donegal, you're talking 75-25.
No, 53% to 47%.
Oh, I wouldn't have thought Barry's was that popular up here.
In terms of ketchup, which do you think is the most popular? Chef tomato ketchup or Heinz tomato ketchup?
It's got to be Heinz, at least 60-40.
72 to 28%.
Oh, yeah. That doesn't make sense.
And the top five most purchased items in Tesco were all milk.
All milk.
Except for number four. Don't know what number four was. Maybe bread. Mm-hmm. So you have it. Apparently the debate has been settled. The favourite tea bag in Donegal is, according to Tesco, Lyons. And the favourite ketchup is Heinz.
Yeah.
There you go. Okay, you learn something new every day. Thank you, Donald. Donald's back with headlines again for you at 12, as you mentioned. All right, you're very welcome back to the programme. Research from Healthy Ireland at Work, a national framework for healthy workplaces in Ireland 2021 to 25, shows that only a third of businesses in Ireland have a formal health and well-being strategy. We're joined on the programme by Greg O'Gorman. Hiya, Greg.
Good morning. How are you?
Good to have you on the show. Good. I don't want to give anything away at Highland Radio as to where we fall into this, but what is a formal health and well-being strategy?
Well, your statistic that you've quoted is correct and probably not too surprising. So a formal strategy really is where a company takes ownership of supporting the well-being of their employees and of their teams. While that's something that has become more popular in recent years, particularly on the back of a difficult COVID period, it is still something that a lot of companies have yet to embrace. While they recognize that they have a responsibility, the budgeting and the focus is not where it needs to be. However, we feel very strongly that companies are starting to awaken and become more aware of their role within this particular space.
And I presume digging into it, if finances is a factor, you know, the spend might increase productivity. Do you know what I mean? So that could be a misnomer on their behalf.
I think that's a really good point, and I think you're absolutely correct. And, you know, in today's climate, for recruitment and retention of talent, it's becoming more challenging, and companies are finding it more and more difficult to find that talent and ultimately retain them, because the costs of achieving those successes within the company are extremely high. Mm. So, yes, if there is an investment in the area of well-being, not only will productivity increase, and the data is there to show that, but also the spend on recruitment and et cetera will also diminish. So there is a return on investment if this is executed correctly by the company.
It's not the hassle of having to deal with HR on a regular basis too. I suppose too, it can come down to the structure of the company though, whether it's an individual. You know, what their philosophy is or ideology is in areas of this. Some might think mindfulness is a load of gobbledygook, and maybe they need to detach themselves from you know, the way they think and think about it in a more business way. Although if you have a board or a company that's part of a larger group, then it probably might be a little bit different. It'd be interesting to see the breakdown of, you know, the types of companies that do have formal health and well-being strategies and those that don't. You know, you could have a company with five employees, might they have a strategy? And then a company with, you know, 80 not. You know, it'd be interesting to see the breakdown more detailed.
Yeah, it would be interesting. And what we are seeing is that certainly on the smaller SME-sized businesses, that's where the well-being focus is not really there just yet. And I'm not saying that it's not there for every company, but just as a general point, the larger organizations certainly have embraced this space long before now, albeit it is a space that's changing quite rapidly. And you made one interesting point there in that it's very much down to the individual. And I think you're absolutely correct, whether it's mindfulness, whether it's nutrition or fitness, physical or mental well-being, there are so many variations to what makes up well-being. And everybody has, you know, a certain maybe grow for a particular or desire or need for one area above the other, or a multiple. In my case in particular, I like, you know, embracing the fitness and the nutrition and the mental well-being, depending on the time of the year and how I feel myself. But I think what SAIL offers is a very holistic approach. And whether you have an interest or a focus on a particular area, we do feel quite strongly that we have provided content around each of our seven well-being values. And we've chosen those values very strategically on the basis that we feel that everybody can fit into at least one of those well-being values, irrespective of where they are in their life and irrespective of their age profile.
Yeah, I mean, some go beyond, you know, and we'll get into it a little bit, Greg. Some go sort of maybe beyond, you know, when we start talking about mindfulness and mental well-being, financial well-being support, it might be we can argue the toss on those. But in terms of career development opportunities, I mean, if we look at what's happening, say, for instance, in terms of the recruitment embargo, the biggest complaint, say, for instance, often within the HSE or in Gardaí, and these are public jobs, is about career development opportunities. One of our biggest barriers to teachers returning to Ireland to work is in terms of career development, because they start at scratch from when they left. Do you know what I mean? So that's kind of standard. The work-life balance, you don't want to grind people into the ground and have a high turnover of staff. You want to provide them with, you know, a decent work-life balance so you can retain them. And goal setting too. You know, it's almost infantile in that. You know what I mean? That we get a clap if we put a square block into a square space. You know, and in some way, it's an almost a developed version of that as adults. Do you know what I mean? Because people like a pat on the back, people like affirmation and what have you. So a lot of this stuff is correct me if I'm wrong, Greg, stuff that really should be in a decent working environment to begin with.
I agree, and you're not wrong. I would say that in many environments, some or all possibly might be in there. And a lot of it is down to the dependency on the leadership and how they want to build a culture within an organization.
Just to be clear, Greg, I'm not saying that they are all in there. I'm saying they should all be in there anyway. Do you know what I mean? But go on ahead. Continue with your point, Greg.
No, I think it's something that we're moving towards, and I think it's very, very important. And back to the whole, even just take the retention and the recruitment side of things, which is exceptionally expensive from a labour perspective within HR to the time and the advertising and the using of recruitment agencies all are increasing in costs all the time. So it's in the interest of these organisations, albeit it should be there. The reality is it's not there in these companies. And what we're just trying to do within SAIL is to provide an environment which has been set up and structured very much with the employee in the epicenter of what we do.
Yeah.
And a lot of you know, well-being platforms and different products out there which are successful to date, a lot of them are set up for the employer first and the employee second. We try to reverse it, and we are providing a genuine value add for employees. Mm. Okay, it may be the employer that ultimately is the financial provider on behalf of the employee. But what's very important and what we feel is a real point of difference for us is that we have built a platform, built a model which combines on-demand content across our seven well-being values. We have 2 to 3 live classes every single week across these well-being values. For example, we had a fitness session last night. We had a book club the week before. We have another session, I think it might be on nutrition, this coming Thursday. So what we're trying to do is provide really genuine content for that employee. And it's back to your point. Yes, this should be fairly simplistic and fairly standard. And it's not.
Listen, how many people do people know listening now who the people aren't necessarily happy in their job? They've got one eye on something else if they got the chance. And a lot of it's down to they don't feel valued. That, in other words, they could walk out the door and it doesn't matter. Do you know what I mean? And
yeah,
you know, well, all this stuff would work to sort of alleviating some of that as well. You know, your reward is not always in money.
It's not. And I think, you know, that's a really, really good point. And what we've seen over the last number of years, and again, maybe COVID has driven or accelerated this, but people are only considering the financial package as one component when considering a job, whether that job is to stay or whether it's to take on a new challenge. It is the overall value to the employee and what the employer places on them as a value that I think they're considering. And that is how they're being treated. It's whether they're working from home or in the office. It's what the environment and the culture is within that organization, because people are making much more strategic decisions now, and financial is simply one component.
In terms of how employers work with SAOL, S-R-O-L, by the way, if anyone wants to search that. Like, do they engage their employees with SAOL? Do you tool them up to change the working environments? What is your relationship with employers?
So we essentially work very closely with our clients, employers, as you mentioned. The website is sale-app.com, just if anyone wants to check it out. We work very closely with an appointed well-being champion within that organization.
Right.
And then we ensure that we handhold and partner with that company and the well-being champion to roll out our platform, educate the employees of the benefits, assure the employees that they are consuming this content in a very private fashion. It's not something that they need to be concerned around, that the employer, you know, they must engage with us because the employer is the paymaster. It's not that. If that was the case, we wouldn't have a platform that is genuinely value-adding. And what we're finding is once we communicate what we do and what we deliver, the engagement levels within the company accelerates dramatically.
Yeah, can't be mandated. It has involved. To have a buy-in, doesn't it?
It has to have a buy-in. And we're not a partner where we're selling something and we're walking away. We're very much on the journey with the employee, or sorry, with the employer and the employee, to ensure that the employer can recognize that there is a return on that investment, because it's a significant investment for companies, particularly with, you know, 1,000 to 3,000 employees as part of their makeup. But it's also equally important that the employees are getting the value that we anticipate and have set SAOL up to be able to deliver. If either of those factors are not working, if the employer is not happy and the employee is not finding what we're delivering as valuable, then we don't have a business that's going to survive in the long term. So we have to ensure both parties independently are happy with how we deliver SAOL within the organisation.
All right, and just remind people of the website there, if people want more information, please, Greg.
So the website, www.saol-app.com. Everything that we discussed this morning and an awful lot more is in there. You can request a brochure, you can set up a demonstration, reach out to us. We're happy to have a chat, no obligations, and yeah, we hope to speak to some of your listeners at some point. And thank you for the opportunity of speaking.
Take care of yourself. It's interesting. Bye-bye. That's Greg O'Gorman there. A caller says, regarding the current conversation, I think that it is all good in terms of people being able to take control of their health and helping people understand how small changes can really help them. But partnering with Operation Transformation is so bad, the show's abhorrent. It's based on body shaming, weight loss advice that is extreme, and it's purely for public entertainment. So many intuitive eating experts, psychologists, health professionals are slamming the show and speaking out. How about we do this, i.e. public community health, without a show like Operation Transformation, whose only priority is profit and entertainment over actual people's long-term health? I don't disagree with you. I don't like those type of shows. I'm not sure if it's exactly in the same format as it was when I first watched it, but we have regular guests on this show involved in the fitness area, and they would not like shows like this because they don't want it to be focused on targets and weight and what have you, and they've got different metrics that show people's improvements. It's about how you feel, isn't it? I don't like it because effectively the people that take part in it are just, you know, subjects for us to watch, and it's just not my type of telly. Maybe Operation Transformation has changed, but thanks very much for that comment. We're talking about little changes. As anyone who listens to this show at all over the last three or four, five, six, seven, however long years we've been doing it, I think I was an early adapter of the air fryer. I really was, I think. But anyway, be that as it may, making a couple of burgers last week in the air fryer. Everything's air fried now, if the truth be told. Nothing is fried. So did the burgers. Good burgers, by the way. Tasty and all that kind of stuff. But when the burgers were finished, I tipped the tray out into the sink. Now, that might have been a mistake, right? But I tipped the tray out into the sink anyway. And had the burgers and what have you. So then went to wash something out or other, and the sink was blocked, completely blocked. I got a plunger and I plunged and plunged, and I came into work the next day with a sore left arm, wouldn't shift it. So I took the water out and it was dry, and I went down to the shop and I got one of these sink busters, you know, those chemicals that you can put down the drain, stuck that down the drain. The next morning came over, poured hot water down, nothing, wasn't budging. So I had to drain the drain again. So I took off the U-bend from under the sink because I'm so handy. Great to have around the house. But anyway, I took the U-bend from under the sink. And from these two burgers alone, now the U-bend was perfectly clear, right? There was no, there wasn't anything that would cause a blockage other than this massive clump of fat. Like the full width, obviously, of the U-bend because it had blocked it, and it was about an inch and a half to 2 inches long, solid white fat, clean fat, like lard, that come out of these two burgers. And as I say, these were good. I thought they were good burgers anyway. But I was thinking, can you imagine if you ate that? Like maybe your body consumes it and it doesn't just go straight into your arteries or whatever. But the amount of fat that came from these two burgers, I shouldn't have poured it down the sink. I know that now. You know, I'm not even sure that's a responsible way of disposing of it. If it's not, my apologies. You can give out to me if you wish. But I just thought it remarkable that this massive, circular, 1.5 inch, 1 inch wide lump of fat came from two burgers. And it was perfectly clean. It was almost like you could spread it on butter or something. But anyway, that's what I would have been eating if it wasn't for the air fryer. I don't know what that even means. Maybe it wouldn't be bad for you. But anyway, 086 60 25,000. Any insights into that or anything else for that matter? Or give us a call on 074 91 25,000.
Good morning, Greg. How are you doing?
I'm doing good, Liam. Thanks for joining us. And we just wanted to invite you on off the back of an email you sent in to us. And it was your experience with a customer in your shop. Tell us the story or the situation, Liam.
Luckily, Greg, an 83-year-old gentleman who lives on his own, received a letter from the Department of Social Protection advising him that his public services card was due to expire in February 2024 and that he was being asked to renew it. The preferred option was to be online at mygov.ie. Or alternatively, he could make contact with his local Entrée office with a proviso in the middle of the letter advising that his free travel pass would lapse if his card was not renewed.
Mm-hmm.
So he came across to me and asked if I would help him with trying to contact Entrée. So we Googled a number for Entrée, and it came up with a help desk number in Dublin, I think. And when eventually we got through to them after about 40 minutes, they advised that the only way to contact the local Entrée office was by email.
Wow.
Because they don't have direct lines. Obviously, the gentleman doesn't have an email of himself. He's not computer literate and he's not online literate. And when I drew that to the lady's attention, she basically says to me, well, would you not contact them on his behalf?
Which, before you continue, you're telling a man who's been working all of his life, I'm sure, contributing and independent, that effectively he would have to rely on your goodwill, which you wouldn't mind doing it, by the way, to act on his behalf. So if he didn't have you, Liam, or didn't have someone else who was computer literate, that's him without a card and losing his free travel, for an example, which is not the way to treat an older person, I don't think.
Simply put, Greg, he's fortunate enough that there's somebody across the road from him. How many people are out there that are being disadvantaged that may possibly don't have that same close connection? It's obviously ageist. It's obviously discriminating against the elderly and those that are not computer literate. And as a taxpayer, I was absolutely shocked that people in that bracket cannot just lift the phone and make contact with their local Entreo office. The fact that he has to rely either on someone else or write to them probably, hoping that he would get a reply, was just, I just found astounding.
But even the email us and we'll call you back is not an effective way of doing business in terms of, you know, that doesn't really sound like great customer service to me either. Personally,
I wouldn't have thought so. I wouldn't have thought so, Greg. It just smacked of being completely wrong, and that's a government department that we as taxpayers pay for. This gentleman, and I'm sure many like him, who would have paid their taxes all down through the years, relying on their social services card, in this instance, fortunately for me, to collect his local pension, and being basically advised that, listen, we'll try and accommodate you some way. It goes all the way back to the household charge in 2012, Greg, when that €100 initially was being put on the houses.
Mm-hmm.
People were told, oh, pay for it online. And those who couldn't, oh, sure, you can get sorted out some other way. You know, again, consecutive governments of the two pertaining main parties consistently discriminating against putting those people who are not online literate, or in this case, elderly, who are obviously not the online literate.
Only for your intervention, Liam, here, just to recap for listeners. So you contacted the Entreo office on this person's behalf. They said email them in for a callback. When you said that this gentleman doesn't have an email address, this is where there's absolutely no thought for someone of certain age or someone with literacy issues or whatever it might be, then they say to you, well, why don't you email on his behalf? The fact that that's the solution to this problem, that the person that just so happened to be trying to help someone out then becomes the emailer on their behalf, that exposes for me the entire problem here, because not everyone has a Liam. And I know I've said that already, but how many older people have lost access to free travel or what have you, because they can't get their head around, they don't have their head around the online element of it. I don't like that gov.au website. I find it a nightmare to sign in every single time. Every time it's a bloody nightmare, I find. But anyway, but also, if you've never used email, and many people would choose not to and don't have to, that's him banjaxed, except for you.
Correct. Absolutely. And that's the nub of the issue.
And how many people, too, that don't have a mobile? I know most people do, but there are people that would send that email or get someone to send it on their behalf and actually sit in the house waiting on that call for fear of missing it, because it's actually such an integral part of their life. Again, which is crazy.
That's another aspect of it, Greg, absolutely. And not to even go into whether there's a GDPR.
I was thinking on that, exposure, to be honest with you, because I would have
thought, you know what I mean?
I would have thought that I would have thought that could have been a problem there. I was expecting them to say, well, sorry, we can't engage with you on behalf of a third party. But obviously, whoever you got through thought you could get away with that through email. But I agree with you. You're acting on that person's behalf with a government body in a very casual way, in a good meaning way, Liam, but it just makes you wonder, is that really the system?
That's right. You know, and how many times do you try and make contact with a bank, a financial institution, a government body on behalf of somebody, and that's the first thing they throw at you?
Oh, I.
Sorry, sure. GDPR, we can't speak to you.
Yeah.
You know?
Okay.
It's nearly used as an excuse to not engage.
All right, okay. Listen, we're going to make some inquiries in relation to this, of course, and get a policy. You know, even if they say, oh, yeah, well, we can do this and do that, we can only talk about what this person's experience was. So if there is something, a different system in place, they're not communicating it to their staff to communicate it to their customers. But leave it with us, Liam. Thank you very much for raising it. It's a really important point.
That was coming from, as I say, the initial number that we obtained was a 1-800 number, I think
Central
it was.
Central office of Atrio.
A central office in Dublin or whatever it is.
Okay.
And the young lady in question, this was after waiting for, as I said to the gentleman, I says, we'll dial this number and now we'll boil the kettle because we'll have a cup of tea waiting while we get somebody to answer. And 40 minutes before someone answered. Do people have that capacity, elderly people have that capacity to sit and wait, you know?
Like, but it's not, as you say, and I know the focus is on your 83-year-old neighbour, but it's not just older people as well. There's different people with different communications abilities and, you know, that probably would be better served by being able to go into an office and stuff. But we're speaking about an older person in this instance, Liam, and I appreciate it. And I'll tell you, he's lucky to have you, Liam, and lucky to have your business across the road. It's a shop you run. Do you want to mention where it is, or are you happy enough to leave it at that?
I'm happy enough to leave it at that,
okay,
Craig.
Okay, Liam. All right. I was going to see if you wanted a plug, but anyway, I know that's not why you contacted us. Take care, Liam.
Lovely, Greg.
Right,
thanks
Slan,
for calling
take
me.
Take care. No, thank Bye-bye. You. We appreciate the email. Just to recap, because it's just important, we've had a few texts in. This time yesterday, we're halfway through an hour of a special feature on the closure of the pastoral child and adolescent counselling services. This is the only such service for people. It's the first port of call. It can often stop people with their mental health deteriorating. People have been bereaved, loads of different reasons, bullied. They might need counselling. I've spoken personally to families of people that have done very well from it and went on to lead very happy and successful lives. The company needs a full-time director to provide the services, because it's grown from an 850-euro donation, it's grown into this massive thing with 26 counsellors, 15,000 counselling sessions over the last 6 years, hugely important, stopping lots of people having to try and see CAMHS, and you know the difficulty people can have in that regard. And it's closing. And it's a closing effectively in the first instance, because neither TUSA, the HSC, or any arm of the state for that matter will not fund €60,000 in funding. A full-time director is required now because of the scale of the operation and for governance and best practice reasons. So it's going to close, and it's going to close in March. They can limp across to March, but 26 councillors are going to be let go. And the consensus was yesterday that if this goes, it can't be rebuilt. It can't be rebuilt in the way it's going to be rebuilt. So obviously, the logical thing for a show like this to do, and any show in any county would do the exact same when a service like this is about to be shut down, is they contact the local minister's office, Minister Charlie McConnell-Ogue, who obviously is at the cabinet table and has a great deal of influence, you would imagine, and also the Minister for Children, Roderick O'Gorman. I know Mr. Gorman is incredibly busy, but this is a very important issue. This is an entire county losing its only counselling services for young people. Don't forget all the surveys which show an increase in young people needing help and an increase in mental health difficulties. So we're 24 hours on, and this is not anti anything, and this is not to expose anything, but we're 24 hours on and we have neither a reply. Caroline, we still don't have a reply from either, no. So on this issue, we've neither a reply from Minister Charlie McConnell-Ogue's office nor even a reply from the Minister for Children's office 24 hours in, which I think is absolutely remarkable. I would love to bring anyone on with some good news or to say, look, I'm working on this. It doesn't matter. As long as we get to a solution, it doesn't matter. I just think it remarkable. And I think it's important that you know that I pass on what I know, that neither office has got back to us at all, not even just to say, right, we're looking into it, or we'll try and do this, or we'll try and do that, or even to refer us to the HSE or TUSLA or anything generic. Nothing. Nothing. And yesterday we heard from the bishop, who says this service has to be retained. We heard from Donna Harper, who very sadly lost her daughter Leona in the Chrysler tragedy, and she was speaking on behalf of others who were able to access this service. Her and her sons were able to access this service. There are people continuously accessing this service. What will happen to them when it's gone? There's a waiting list of close on 400 people waiting for counselling sessions. We should be growing this. We should be saying, wow, this is a huge success. And all it would take is 60,000 and maybe a little bit more funding to... Now, don't forget also, this is a service that both Tusla and the HSE refer to. And neither of them will provide the funding that is required to keep it going. And as I say, unfortunately, any inquiries that we've made so far, we haven't even had a response to. And that's where we're at. That's where we're at, 2024. Wednesday, 17th of January, 24 hours on. Dolores on Facebook says, aren't you such a lovely man, Liam? Lot of people awaiting the renewals of travel passes here in the Rosses. Hi, Greg. Listening to Liam concerning the elderly gentleman and his travel card. All the gentleman has to do is go to his local intro office. A friend, relative, alone. The elderly agency helps people. Liam may have spoken to an agent that isn't very good at their job. As for the MyGov website and your difficulty using it, you have to log in on numerous occasions for security reasons. Thank you, Peter. I understand. I get you. But I can log into my bank account with my thumbprint. You know, I'm not saying you should be fit to do that on gov.ie, but anyway, I take your point. Please tell the gentleman to go to his local office, get it sorted out. It's no problem. He has to have his photograph taken as well. You have to make an appointment. Just call them, especially if it's the Letterkenny area, no problem. Now, Liam was told by the intro person in Dublin that there's no direct number to call. Read the public services card. I got the same letter. I went to Buncrana Welfare Office to renew. They maintained they only had one photographer on site and couldn't take my photo, so they'd write out to me with an appointment to come in. I live over 18 miles away from Buncrana. I have an appointment to come back next week. Exact same situation for me yesterday, trying to get through to the intro office looking for an appointment for my mother-in-law to get her a public services card. I had to email them on her behalf looking for an appointment, but I've had no reply. So I don't know now, do they not respond to me because I'm doing it on her behalf and data protection, etc.? It does not seem to be a sound practice. There's another person, had to email on behalf of their mother. Has the email been opened? What's the normal response time? Did they ignore it because of GDPR? It needs to be a little bit more clearer.
Business Matters, in association with the Faculty of Business at ATU Donegal. For a career in financial governance, consider the Level 9 MA in Governance and IT in Financial Services, starting in January. Contact the Exec Ed Coordinator on 9186206 or email donald.hannigan@atu.ie today.
Okay, it is Wednesday. It's the day that Highland Radio's business podcast, Business Matters, is available. And its presenter and compiler is Chris Ashmore. He's with me now. Hi, Chris.
Good morning, Greg.
Good to have you in. Before we get to the pod itself, let's talk a bit of news and strong growth on the recruitment front in our region.
Yeah, now it's interesting to note, because we're pretty much at full employment, this company, FRS Recruitment, all over the country, they help employers find employees, but 20 of the 26 counties in Ireland had a decline in job opportunities last year. That's because there is a shortage of labour. Donegal was one of six counties to buck the trend. So there are opportunities out there. And in many respects, you know, you can look at it, I suppose, both ways. If you're looking for work.
No job opportunities for old, bald presenters.
Oh, we'll find you something.
Come on, lads. We'll find you something. Headhunt me.
Well, I'm only joking. And of course, when there's a shortage, it can drive up wages in some sectors. So it's the rather interesting scenario, given that we got through COVID and everything, and we have, and it's something I've come across now, speaking to pretty much people in every business, it is very difficult to get staff at the moment.
Especially good staff, who are very committed and would add great value to a company, such
indeed
as myself.
And then when you go and train them up, and if they go and depart, you're that's back it to square one again.
I know,
so
exactly.
It's a big issue.
But anyway, it is for sure. And sorry to be a little facetious, but strong growth on recruitment in Donegal, bucking the trend of other counties. Okay, opportunities at the National Digital Research Centre. What's this about, Chris?
Yeah, now this is a rather interesting... it's a government-backed organisation. Now, essentially, it was founded back in 2007, and I suppose it's a glorified start-up, one-stop shop. But they're holding a 48-hour online event in February. Now, this is for people who really are, as they say, globally ambitious. So they're looking for people who've got a really good idea. They want a little bit of support, a bit of mentoring. You can get up to €100,000 in funding. So, Greg, if you've got a good idea to move jobs, this is it. Get onto the National Digital Research Centre with your plan to save the planet and who knows what else.
So, the closest I got to that is my head kind of looks like a globe. I don't know, Chris. But, you know, there are lots of different funding streams out there, and I think it's getting the knowledge and getting out in front, you know, between the various, you know, as I say, there's a lot of money out there, not just for businesses, but even for community organisations. And if you get on top of the application process and all that, it can really work quite well for you. And there's also loans for smaller businesses available too. You have a bit of news on that?
Yes, Microfinance Ireland. Now, this is geared at small businesses. So here in Donegal, you can access loans through Microfinance Ireland of up to €25,000. And if you want to find out more about that through the local enterprise office, they're having a webinar. So online, Thursday, January the 25th. So that's what, tomorrow week. And it'll be via Zoom, 10 to 11 o'clock. So you go on and everything you want to know explained for you in a space of an hour. And if you want to proceed then, you know exactly what to do.
Yeah, and we were talking to the Employment Minister earlier on about the work that Leo is doing in supporting jobs and, you know, almost 400 new jobs supported in Ireland, in Donegal, sorry, over the last year. Mm-hmm. Right, let's get on to the pod itself. And your guest this week is Maura Toner.
Yes, there's the Food Coast. She's Food Coast Advisor here in Donegal. So there's been a huge explosion in growth of small companies and individuals, everything from home bakes to ready meals, restaurants, chefs. And Donegal has a growing reputation as a foodie destination. There's a lot to look forward to, and a lot of the people in the sector are doing very well indeed. And Food Coast Donegal is really, it's an initiative there that helps to support and to grow this sector. And again, there is funding available, there's mentoring, and she's very much upbeat about the future.
I'm excited for the year ahead. I think that we are going to have a great calendar of events. I think that our businesses will really benefit, particularly from the Meet the Producer event that we're going to run in March. And we will run that again if it is successful and if there's demand for it. It's going to be a great opportunity for the food service providers in the county to see the quality products that are being created in this county. So I'd encourage everyone to attend that, and we will issue a press release nearer the time with full information and details of where and when, as I say, early stages of planning, but it will probably be in early March. So keep an eye out for that. There's a great cohort of business people involved in the network, and you know they're very excited about the prospects ahead for them as groups of either the restaurant chef cluster or producer clusters, and they are excited and passionate about what they do, and I think that that is going to transfer into success for everybody in 2024.
Yeah, going to be a lot of useful information in the full form of that interview with Maura Toner. She's the Food Coast Donegal Advisor with the Leo office, the Donegal Local Enterprise office, and that podcast available for you right now to stream from our website or download, also on Spotify or iTunes. And there's a whole back catalogue of podcasts there. I think anyone with an interest in business or interest in starting a business, there's a lot of great advice and information. As I say, it's available for you right now. It's broadcast on Sunday too, Chris.
Yes, Sunday after the 6 o'clock news. And if you want to contact me, the email address, businessmatters@highlandradio.com.
And we'll see you next Wednesday. All being well, Chris, thank you very much indeed for that. Back with more after the break. This morning at 8:30, because it happens every morning at 8:30, got a notification from Google Photos to look back at memories. And it was from this time last year. And this time last year, there was snow and schools were closed and people weren't able to get into work and people couldn't get out of... I seem to recall this time last year, carers couldn't get to certain places because the roads were impassable. Michelle, I mean, do you think we overreact to the weather or we're ill-prepared for the weather when it comes? What's your view?
Good morning, Greg. I think we're actually ill-prepared for the weather. This is nothing new. It snows every year. We have frost every year, yet nothing is done about it. There's no preparations made. Year after year, it's the same thing, a flurry of snow and the whole country stops. It's ridiculous.
How has it impacted you today?
We had the home health coordinator call this morning and she cancelled services for today and she said she was possibly cancelling them for tomorrow as well. I just don't understand why alternative measures are not put in place before this happens.
And have some sort of a strategy that enables people to get to where they need to go when the weather inevitably, at least once or twice a year, is like it is today.
Yeah, like we had a situation here last year. You might recall talking to me where a home help had crashed her car.
Yes, I do. That's exactly what I was referencing when I was introducing you. I didn't know it was you, but here we are again, Michelle. What a coincidence.
Here we are again. Now, we've repeatedly requested grip bins to be put in place on the braes, on the hills, because the council are telling us they're not sending up any gripping lorries because the roads are too bad, which is fine and fair enough. I appreciate that. But, you know, they should be doing alternative measures to get grip bins and grip in place. Now, my partner was on to the local councillor this morning who told him that if we got a committee together, they would request funding for a bin.
A bin, which would have
a bin.
Salt or grit at the top of the hill.
My partner went down to the council yard before and was told he wasn't allowed to get any grit. He was only allowed to get sand. Now, there's no salt on the sand and the sand does nothing for the hills. He does sand the roads whenever the sand or salt is available. You can't find the sand under the snow. And most of the time it's frozen and you have to chip at it to try and, like, you know, to be even able to spread anything.
It's a bit Father Ted, isn't it, really? And it's not your fault. It's just the setup. So you are, in fairness, you say, look, I can manage here. But what about others who are going to be let down today?
Yeah, well, it's about those other elderly people that's in the house on their own. I can manage. I can get by without the home help. Not all the time, because I have my own job. I'll be able to work my hours back tonight. I'll be switching on my computer and making back the time tonight.
Wow.
I can manage. I feel sorry for the home help as well. They shouldn't be in a position where they're afraid to get in their cars. There should be alternative, you know, measures in place. This goes on year, and we're going backwards because the roads up here were gritted back in the 80s, Craig. You know, we pay council or property tax up here, but we get nothing for it. There's not even running water up here. So, you know, I just think it's a bit ridiculous. You know, I lived in America, and I think we had one snow day ever in 11 years.
Mm-hmm.
And it was on an April Fool's Day. They made sure the roads were passable. Now, I appreciate while they can't, you know, salt or sand or treat all the roads, you know, there can be measures put in place where, you know, we have hills, you know, it's clear to the council, it's clear to the people on the roads where the hills is. We have to pay our road tax. We deserve the same treatment as anybody, you know, in a town, in a village, or getting their road treated. Mm-hmm. Why are we any different? It's just not fair. I don't know.
It's a social tax for living in rural Ireland. That's the way the thing's going. If you choose to, in inverted commas, choose to live in a rural area, well, then you're going to have to face these types of inconveniences. You hope that's not the case, but you do wonder. And also you mentioned that back in the day, going back 30, 40 years, these roads were gritted. Are we getting a little bit trigger happy in a little bit of snow, a little bit of ice? You know, the buses don't come out, the schools don't open, you know, people don't travel to, you know, carers don't travel. Like, is there, do you understand it, or do you think we're getting a little bit sensitive to a bit of ice and snow?
Well, to an extent, but, you know, if you have the correct tires on, if you're driving, you know, with care, you know, make the judgment yourself. But, you know, I don't expect anyone to risk themselves or crash their cars or anything, but I just, you know, I do expect, you know, a level of service, whether the sun is shining or the snow is falling. I do expect the same level of service, while it may be late, delayed, or, you know, not all the time, not constant, maybe have one call a day. But there's a poor old person living there or living somewhere today that's not going to get any care, possibly not going to get any care tomorrow. And they may not even be able to get themselves out of bed.
I just don't think it's fair.
It's very worrying when you put it like that. Okay, Michelle, listen, thanks for your time today. That's Michelle. Do you agree or disagree? 086 60 25,000. The same situation may pertain tomorrow or may carry on until tomorrow. We're at the end of the show, bar the shout, but don't let that put you off texting or calling, because we are still here to take your comments. I have an uncle in the same position as the gentleman Liam's working with in terms of renewing the card. If I rang, I cannot talk on the phone without him being present, and as I am not available during the day to support him, yet it's okay for me to email them on his behalf. Where is his right to take responsibility for his own affairs as long as possible? Why can't a form to renew not be issued to people who are not digital users in any form? Is there any exception to the rule of application online? Right, we'll get to that tomorrow morning, if that's okay. We just don't have time at the moment, Caroline. Thank you. Right, I just read that comment. My free TV license doesn't expire, so why does free travel have an expiry date, or indeed your PPS card? Surely you're still the same person. It's just more bureaucracy. Would it not be a breach of the GDPR regulations if you have to rely on someone to contact the department on your behalf? That's taking away your independence, isn't it? Well, that's the problem. This gentleman was robbed of his independence. I'm not sure if it's in the form of a digital communication, if GDPR doesn't cover that. It seems like it should. Another caller says, totally agree with that gentleman. It's an absolute disgrace what they expect of the older generations that know very little about phones, computers, emails. We have the same experience with our parents, but luckily we're there to help. What about those who have no children and living in a rural area? It's just disgraceful. Are these people falling between the gaps? You know, that's my concern. I'm in the same situation with online. I'm just not great. My niece had to do it for me, and it still wouldn't take the photo. I had to make an appointment in the office to get it done, and when I went in, they said it's a regular issue for them that people have. I think that whenever your card is up, that they should renew it for you. I've been trying to update my service card since November, and it's still not sorted. The medical card is renewed every 2 years. The bus pass and services card should be renewed the same way. AIB are able to renew your card automatically. Why don't the social welfare do the same? It's hard for older people to navigate services online, and again, not just older people. Hi, Greg. This comes in from John. Driving from Buncrana to Clonmany 1 hour ago, roads have been gritted from Buncrana as far as the North Pole bar Drumfries. However, from there to Clonmany, the road's covered with snow and ice. Who is responsible for gritting the Clonmany road? It's not being gritted, and this is a common occurrence, and on it goes. Listen, we're back with more for you tomorrow morning at 9. Thank you so much for supporting the programme. I really appreciate it, and for getting involved. John Bresson's coming up around the Northwest after the news at 12. But for me, Greg Hughes and Caroline and Shannon and Donna Marie, who helped on the show today, have a wonderful Wednesday. Stay safe, mind the roads tonight and overnight and in the morning, and we'll be with you at 9.